It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week we are going to review a different album. But first thing is first, we've got Dean from the Infernal Sea. The last time you were on, it was 2016. Fucking hell, 4 years ago. I feel old. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hey, you alright?
Not too bad. Tell us a little bit about why you picked this album to review, and I've only heard it through your recommendation on listening to it for the show, so tell me about it.
Well, Hellbringer was this band that I just kind of stumbled across. I think I found them on, it was either YouTube or Bandcamp, and I just obviously saw the cover and I was like, oh, this sounds interesting, I'll give it a blast, and instantly just fell in love with it as soon as I heard it, because it is just pure 1986 Slayer worship. If you were to put a Slayer cover over the cover of Hellbringer, it sounds like a Slayer album they never recorded, if that makes sense. No one really knows of them. They're some Australian band, and yeah, that album.
I knew nothing of them too, so yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah, it's just a blinding album. Just everything about it is just, it just screams heavy metal.
Joe, did you know of this band before this?
I did actually, and I actually slagged this band off a few years ago.
For the exact reasons why Dean likes the album. So this is going to be a good little contrast. I'm not looking have a debate or just sit and go, no, shit. I got a lot of respect for Dean, and I'm always on the lookout for new albums and whatnot. So hopefully, as this episode goes on, I might be won over and see it on a new light and actually quite like it. But yeah, we'll get more into that as the episode goes on. So especially when we have a guest on, it's always good to have, you know, three different sort of takes on an album rather than, you know, when it's normally, if it's me and Gully and it's just the two of us, but when we have someone else on, like we did the last episode where we did the Death Sound of Perseverance, it would have been a pretty boring episode if all three of us just went, it's great. You know, Luke really didn't like that album.
And, I was surprised with that, to be fair.
You really liked it, and I was kind of, I saw both kind of perspectives of it, so I was kind of just giving it a little. So yeah, I think that's a good thing to listen to when, look, you know, because if someone really likes this album, they're going to get three different takes on it, and then if someone who's never heard this album is going to go, well, you know, I can listen to it with a couple of different perspectives in mind. So I think that's a good little unique take we have on this show.
Definitely. It's always good to get different views, isn't it? You know, because like you say, everybody has a different opinion, and it's always good to hear that.
I always like as well. Sorry.
And I always hate.
No, but an album, say I really like an album, watching a YouTube video or listening to a podcast where someone's absolutely slating it, I think is actually quite healthy, because you can even go, you can even just laugh it off, or you can go, well, hold on a minute, the guy might be onto something, and that goes vice versa. So,
definitely.
I think before we get into the review, though, let's have a talk about what you've been up to.
The Infernal Sea have got a new album coming out.
You've just posted a new video, very interesting, cool looking video as well. And let's just pick up where we left off, really.
So, from 4 years ago, obviously we had just released The Great Mortality on the now folded Cacophonous Records. And then after that, we came out with the Agents of Satan EP that was released via Apocalyptic Witchcraft, which was kind of a stepping stone into the sort of sound that we have moved into now for the new album. It's very much similar in the style of, you know, Agents of Satan and stuff like that. And then, yeah, so the new album of us obviously being released now, comes out in September, again on Apocalyptic Witchcraft. And that's where we are with the band at the moment.
Apocalyptic Witchcraft is a great little label as well. They've got a pretty small roster, but it's a very potent, very high quality roster. Most notably for me off the top of my head is
the sort of side project that David Gray from Acker, Cocker and Voices has got, the Antichrist Imperium.
That's the ones, yeah.
Yeah, with the guy, the guitarist who used to be in the Berserker, also of Acker, Cocker, has just released a terrific album this year with the band Werewolves.
Oh, okay.
If you like your death metal, it's fucking absolutely fantastic. But I've just in preparation for this episode, I've
got out my copy of The Great Mortality. I've not listened to it for a while, but I spun it day before yesterday.
And that's a really interesting album. There is a lot going on that. And you really do experiment with different you know, styles. And it's all under the black metal umbrella, but you have got a lot going on. Is this new album, Negotium... You're going to have to say this for me, mate, before I fuck it up.
It's Negotium Cruxis. It's Latin.
But Cruxis, yeah.
I mean, there's different ways of pronouncing it.
You have to raise your hands up when you say the Cruxis.
Is it more sort of... You normally get that with bands. They would be a bit more experimental or try different things on the first album and then sort of refine it down to what they excel at on like a second or third album. Is that what's going on this one, or are you expanding even further?
I still think we're experimenting with this one. Definitely experimenting with the sound, but I think we've finally found the Infernal Sea sound and kind of honed that a little bit. Because quite a lot of our songs have that black and roll element to it. You know, we like that whole rock and roll groove. And this album does have quite a bit of that. But it is still very experimental, but still very much sounds like us.
Yeah,
I think it's about like focusing and just understanding what works and what's not, and it does take a little bit of time to get that mesh together, because like I've been in bands and Joe's been in bands and we understand it's like it's hard to get that groove, because when you first start out you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you're just throwing shit at the wall and hopefully it'll stick. Yeah. And then you find your own way in a way. So yeah, I understand that completely.
Yeah, if you look at our first album with The Call of the Argo, like that was very heavily death metal influenced, and as you say, that was four individuals all trying to, you know, input their own sort of influences into the music, and then that was the outcome of it. And then, you know, we moved on to The Great Mortality, and that was when we kind of refined things and went, actually, this is what we liked from the first album, and kind of put that into The Great Mortality. And then again, we've taken, you know, what works out of The Great Mortality and then adapted it even further into the new album. So I think we've been together 10 years as a band. So we've kind of, we just gel really well. You know, we know what each other's thinking. We know when we write in songs, it just flows out of us. Because we're just comfortable with each other now.
Yeah, I think you guys are definitely one of the most exciting black metal acts to come out of the UK in recent times. I guess you guys and Woad, have you heard of them?
Yeah, we played with Woad and Taka at the Underworld in December.
They've got two fantastic albums, but they're a bit more extreme than you guys. They're very quiet, abrasive, and
yeah,
just real shredding wrists, while you guys, you know, experiment with different things. But one thing with Infernal Sea is your visual aspect. That you've put on a great show, and I've seen you, I think I've seen you twice now. I've bumped into you to a couple of gigs as well, I believe. We spoke to you at the Underworld. I don't know if I saw if you was playing or if you just happened to be at a gig, but I definitely saw you at the Underworld, and we saw you recently downstairs at the Dome. You was opening for, I can't remember the band you were opening for. It was a death metal band.
Arkham and Faustus, weren't it, or something?
Yeah. Now, I
can understand you not knowing what the name is.
I didn't think much of that band. My mate wanted to go to that gig because he liked them, and I went because you guys were opening for them. So I was like, I watched you don't see, and then just have a beer. So that's
And that's where I picked up the Agents of Satan EP in that show. But I did notice that the show had evolved, and you've got the visuals going on. You've got the black plague masks, and you've got the hoods, and they're different. You're doing the best you can with. I just wish someone would throw like £1 million at you, because then I just know you'd get really creative and just come out of all sorts of fucked up stuff to watch. And
definitely. And that's the thing, isn't it? Money obviously makes the world tick. But the show has certainly evolved even more since then. That was still in its early stages. Because then we went on to play Bloodstock and Damnations and Damnation Festival and kind of, nailed the look there, really. And they were great shows for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic what you're doing. And again, it's just really creative. And it's one of those things that you watch where you just think, right, these guys are actually making an effort. They care about what they're doing. It's not just another, especially when you're playing venues like the Underworld, you know.
I love the Underworld. Never diss the Underworld.
I'm not dissing the Underworld, but saying is you go there so often and you see so many different styles of music, like hardcore bands and whatnot. So when someone does play a venue like that and they really do make the effort and try and pull something out of the bag and give people something different, it just goes that much further. And you can always tell as the band grows and gets bigger, you're gonna move along with it and evolve as you get bigger, and as the crowds get bigger and, you know, a bit more finances do come in, you're going to be putting that into the band. And you can tell, like, the sort of aesthetics of the live show, the artwork with the albums, the packaging, like you can really tell that you guys put you're firing from all cylinders. As much, of course, the music comes first, but the whole package is definitely worth investing in, especially from the sort of Bandcamp generation when everyone's just downloading. And the bands have kind of got a little bit lazy as well, because when you do buy a physical product, it's just sort of a print off of the, you've got the, you know, the digipacks, the vinyls, the Agents of Satan picture disc is like just fucking lovely to look at.
And I am all for picture discs, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I regret, and I'm sure I've said it on the show, I had fuckloads of picture discs when I was younger. Slayer stuff and all this. And I sold them to go to the club in Liverpool.
No, this Agents of Satan one's fucking awesome. You've got a really nice print on the disc, and you've got this nice little the fold over that it sits in. And yeah, you can just tell you make the effort, you know?
Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, we're all collectors at heart. You know, we grew up in that age where you'd go to the record shops and you sift through all the records and you pick stuff up, judging, you know, just looking at the cover and judging it and going, oh, this is going to be pretty cool, you know, because this obviously was before the internet age, and everything was nicely packaged back then. It had to sell it, you know, and like you say, people and bands have become a bit lazy that, you know, just the standard jewel cases.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do something special.
Or they've got like some stupid like shit black kind of artwork and stuff.
Yeah.
And it is really disappointing, to be fair. I grew up about enjoying the covers, listening to the music based on what you saw. And you don't get that now at all. It's all about the first 10 seconds. If it doesn't hit the first 10 second fucking thing, people generally click next. And within the 10 second life, unfortunately, whether it's videos, whether it's music, and I think it takes a lot away from the enjoyment of music, because you're finding something new. And this is why I like what you've brought around the table for us today. You've given me something new to listen to, and that's why we love getting people on board to get that new music, to get that excitement, because I'm not going to a fucking record store because they're all fucking shut, for one. And for two, there's about one in Liverpool. So I love it. I love this media that we've got now. It's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
Just one thing as well. I've pre-ordered the album, and I think last time you came on the show, I said to you, why have you put the album out on cassette? And you went, well, why not? You know, it's one extra thing. And you said, you know, we're collectors at heart, and we thought it was a nice little thing to put together. Well, I've actually pre-ordered the CD and the cassette, because the cassette looks awesome. You've got the album artwork printed on the actual cassette, and it just looks...
Coolest thing is, with my stereo, is that there's one cassette player that works out of the two, and I'm so happy with that, because I've got like signed cassettes and stuff still in my collection. Cassettes are cool. They don't sound as good as the CDs or whatever, but like, just for the fact that I used to wind this shit back into the spool with my pencil on my Sony Walkman, because it was the only shit I had to listen to music. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's just I wasn't sold to begin with, but now I am. It's basically what I'm pointing out. So,
eating them words that you said 4 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So. They are a cool little item, you know. They're just an extra little collector's item that people buy into. And like you say, cassettes, you know, they're a novelty and they do sound all right. I mean, they're not the best quality. And when they chew up in your cassette player, that's the most frustrating thing in the world. But, yeah, there's just something about them. They're just a cool little collector's piece, you know.
Yeah, it's something to put on your shelf mostly, to be fair.
Yeah.
So shall we get on with the album? Let's talk about the cover. And just only one thing I've got to say about the cover is that Hitler in the middle, kind of waving from hell. Because he looks like fucking Hitler. There he is. Old Adolf.
I guess so, yeah.
Maybe
it's fucking Hitler.
Do you know what? I've never actually noticed Hitler on the cover, but they are in hell, so maybe.
Well, he's got the mustache and everything. He's just having a good wave. He's getting tortured and he's just waving from the middle. Because who's going to be in the middle of the fucking hell? It's probably going to be him in it, really.
Put him in there. Put Boris and Trump in there as well. And then jobs are good.
Oh, dear.
So
it's funny because I only recently pointed out the album cover of Rain in Blood by Slayer. The guy's got the big ard on. I never noticed that until recently.
Well, I wasn't aiming to look for it. I just clicked in the middle and just there he was, Zinghai. You know what I mean? He was just doing the shit in the middle of it. And it was like...
Possibly.
It's fucking Hitler.
I quite like the Satan figure in the background as well, with the red background. I think that would have been a cover on its own.
Just from the cover on its own, it's got 1980s all over it, though. And you know, from my fucking previous recordings, how many have you done? Fucking hundreds, thousands, whatever. Love it. It looks like it could have come out in the '80s, and I'm all in already.
It really does look like the artist that did Rain in Blood. It's very similar, isn't it?
They're definitely going for that vibe, aren't they? Very Hell Awaits, and
which I don't think is a bad thing. You know, they've literally written this album that is just Slayer Part 2, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think, you know...
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's just absolute worship, isn't it, for them, you know? Which is cool.
Yeah, so Fall of the Cross, very, very, very Slayer opening bit. Come on, screaming guitars. And then a thrashy opening. So good so far. You can understand what he's singing as well, which, if you've ever listened to the show, you understand that I have to know what you're saying. You could just be going like a pet fucking pug. And I'm like, what the fuck are you going on about? Did they go for like an older sounding album on this recording? Was it just lack of money? Because like, I'm thinking it could be either to be fair. Because the sound quality, I just wanted to open up a little bit. But I have the feeling it was meant to sound like this. Dual guitars. The lot. Top little opener, drums are on point. I like the breakdown about 3 minutes in, and it's a good little track from this band who I knew fuck all about before. It sets the tone, and so the tone's good for me so far.
No, definitely. It's just a great track, isn't it? And like you say, with the recording, I think they purposely did go for that slightly rawer sound. I don't know if this was recorded digitally or analog, but because I think the other album they've got was released before this. And that sounds a lot different.
I think it's hard to come across an analog studio nowadays.
This had to be meant. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know Eric Rutan bought the tape deck from Morris Sound Studios. He actually owns that now.
Oh, really?
And I think he's. I remember seeing something where he's managed to incorporate. He basically does a bit of that and a bit of digital. And he's managed to mix them together. But I think if there's a certain vibe that you're going for, we don't always have to sound like some sort of nuclear blast, clean, sterile, sort of perfect sound. And I don't think that would have suited this album in particular.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So I think that's probably purposeful. I mean, they very well may have recorded it live. You do get that now, don't you? I think it costs a bit of money, but you can sort of get each individual member in each thing and just go, right, everyone go, bang, and they record everyone simultaneously.
It's something about the arse end and the tinniness of it that makes me feel like it was purposeful, because they did record it in the 2000s, so it makes me feel like there's been something added to it to make it sound like it was from fucking 1980, 82, 83. So, yeah. And maybe that detracts from it a little bit, in my opinion, but, like, because I'm a proper fucking... I'm an audiophile, for fuck's sake. But, like, yeah. Good opener, and the music is good.
Yeah.
Any more for Fall of the Cross?
Just pointing out the intro, that sort of ringing feedback, it kind of mirrors Hell Awaits.
Took me thunder away for later.
It doesn't quite drag on for as long as Hell Awaits does, so I'll give it that.
no, it's got good frantic riffing, good thing. I mean, I would sort of say you've got the riffage of Slayer, but the he's kind of got like a Tom Araya thing going on, but he's also got that sort of gritty snarl of Kronos from Venom.
And I would say take Slayer's music with Venom's vocals, and that's pretty much what he's got.
A bit of death, I would say. He's got that voice where you can... He's growling, he's shouting, but you can understand what's going on, which is quite similar to death as well. I know, I can just tell by your face, Joe.
Me?
At this point, yeah, man. Coven of Darkness.
Am I still on camera? I thought...
I am still, so it's all
good. Oh, cool. Well, I thought I'd turn mine off.
We all have the internet.
Are you a... I'm sorry, I was going to say, Joe, are you actually a fan of Slayer or not?
Yes.
Massive.
So...
Yes, me too.
So is that why you're not too keen on this? Because it is just pure Slayer worship?
My take, like I said, I brought this out. I kind of like you. I saw this on a timeline. I thought there was a cool looking album cover, and it was. I think I saw like a quick comment. It's as if Rain in Blood never happened, and they carried on down the Hell Awaits thing. And I remember listening to it at the time, and it wasn't this band in particular I've got a problem with, actually. There's a lot of it going on in death metal, especially a certain record. Oh, fuck it, I'll say it. Dark Descent. Where yes. Every single fucking band that comes out sounds like Incantation. And now Incantation have got an album coming out this year. It's like, oh, well, that's like 80% of death metal bands. There's no point putting an album out this year. So there's a lot of, you get like a insert name here and then worship. And I think that's getting, you're seeing a lot of it in metal today. And I think influence is perfectly fine, but I'm seeing a lot of regurgitation. And
Led Zeppelin of late, that band.
Yeah, what's that? Greta Van Fleet. That's the peak of it to me.
Yeah, that's where that's where it's just got old.
Yeah. So that's pretty much my stance on a whole, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think Thrash is still. Is still quite original as a movement, though. I mean, there's a lot... you've got a lot of modern-day thrash bands that have got quite an original sound to them that are sounding pretty good. I mean, like Power Trip and stuff, they're just nailing it at the moment.
There's a lot of really good bands, actually, and I'm quite strongly believe that metal is actually, creatively anyway, is actually going through another golden age right now. I think there's some phenomenal albums coming out in the underground. You just got to sort of dig and look for them, but there is a lot of Landmarks albums coming out at the moment. And Thrash, about 5 years ago, it kind of went through this, again, this sort of regurgitation thing where you had these people with these big trainers, overly tight jeans, a creator shirt that looked like it was printed that morning, and they were literally...
Hang on a minute. I love my skinny jeans. I've only just got skinny legs.
Yeah, but it looked like they were just they'd gone into Urban Outfitters. Have you ever been into Urban Outfitters?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, so what used to be like quite a quirky little cool little clothes shop, it's kind of become this, right, are you into hip hop? Go to this section. Are you into punk? Go to that section. And you can just sort of pick up every item and accessory and you'll go, yeah.
In the defense of commercialization of heavy metal, like a Primarni or Primark, if you like, have some really cool heavy metal t-shirts in there. And I picked up Slayer there.
That Slayer t-shirt was pretty cool. I'll give him that. But but with that being said, I'm saying the sort of chaff of the sort of thrash metal resurgence has sort of worked off now, and you're getting a lot of the sort of better of the bands have stayed around and are putting out really good stuff. So yeah, it's all good.
No, definitely. I think, you know, with the thrash movement, you've still got all the old bands around, obviously bar Slayer that have supposedly called it a day, but I'm sure they'll be back. But yeah, all the thrash bands are still actually going and still putting out killer albums as well, which is great, you know. But there was, I mean, I quite like my thrash, so digging through record shops and digging out all the old sort of like British Invasion, you know, of Eccentrics and Reanimator and Evil Dead and stuff like that. And it's just, there was some killer stuff that just wasn't recognised, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually working my way for a book at the moment called Contract in Blood, which is it's a history of thrash metal, UK thrash metal by Ian Glasper, who was the bass player in Stamping Ground. Do you remember him?
I know Glasper, yeah.
And he's done a couple of books about hardcore punk and anarcho-punk. You know, like he sort of discharges and stuff like that. He's done another book about the hardcore scene, and then he's done this recent book about thrash metal just by the UK.
Okay.
And when it came out, you could get like a free CD compilation as well, so it complements the book brilliantly. And we was always good at thrash. We never quite competed with the Americans, but when you go through this book and go through this CD comp, there is a lot of hidden gems to sort of discover. Some bands I've discovered, for Slaughter, Hydravane.
Yeah.
Not Slaughter, sorry, Slammer.
Yeah, and, Slammer are great. Is it Slammer X, isn't it? Or they have the X?
You said Slaughter, and I thought of that band with the throwing the fucking knife at the apple on the thing.
Do you know what?
Which is a great album.
Crescendo, by Slaughter is a fucking fantastic album. But they also did there's also been another album, because Chuck Schuldiner actually joined them for a little while. And there's a recording session that's also been released. Sorry?
Are you on about Slammer or Slaughter?
I'm on about Slaughter at the moment, but Slammer, the UK band. Just because I said Slaughter and by mistake, and now I've kind of digressed onto them. But yeah, anyway, back to the UK thing. Another band of recently, I'd heard of them, but never actually properly. I've just finished a chapter on them. Is English Dogs?
English Dogs were great. Invasion of Porky Men actually was one of the first albums that I got, because when I grew up, my mum was a punk and my dad was a rocker, so I kind of got into all that sort of stuff. Actually, I know one of the guys from English Dogs lives around here. But yeah, Invasion of the Porky Men was great, and they were just a good band. Their early stuff was really thrashy, wasn't it?
Yeah, really. Well, from what I gather, the first couple of albums were kind of dischargey style punk, and then they went metal on the third album. And then there's even a debate in this thing whether they actually went full on metal, and you know, it's pretty good read. But
So, Coven of Darkness. It's a longer track on the album, and Joe Stole Me Thunder, hella weight vibes from this album, frantic opening. I do wish the sound was that little bit better. The music is good, and it doesn't do it justice, the sound quality at times. I like the riff at about 40 seconds, and I will constantly reference Slayer, but they love Slayer. And the vocals do have a death edge to them, like I said earlier. I like the sections around 2 minutes and 24 seconds, when it speeds up, thrashy and on point. And the bass plays along with the main riffs too, which, being a bass player, I fucking love it when a bass player will match the guitarist and go, "Hey, you can do that shit, knobhead. I'm gonna just fucking smash it out too." And yeah, cool. Still a good track, and it does seem like one of them albums that you just put on when you sat with the boys having a beer. And the slowdown's cool, and it's one of them I do find myself getting drawn into at times so far with this album. Did I hear that riff before? Do I know that riff? But it works. The little weird off-key bass fills work for me as well, but I just wish the quality was a little bit better and it didn't sound like a fart in a box. Where it's like, there's no arse end, it's just dead tinny, but like cool. It's a good song. First two tracks, I'm all in, loving it so far.
I think, yeah, so far it's a really good little screaming sort of at the beginning. There's some, don't get me wrong, this is pretty far from bad. I mean, even the fact that they've made you conjure up Slowing Your Mind while listening to them is a credit to them. I mean, there's some fantastic riffing here, there's some great playing, and there's some blistering solos. So I'm not just going to shit all over the band throughout the whole thing. It's just, I'll pretty much explain my position already. But yeah, I have enjoyed listening to the album throughout. I listened to it a few years ago and automatically like sort of stuck my nose up at it. But
you bitch.
But I've been listening to it in the background during my night shift this week, and I have found myself sort of nodding along. And so again, I mean, this is too bad. So yeah, no, this is pretty cool track.
I think it's just, for me, it's an album that flows really well, and I feel that that's quite important in this day and age.
Yes, you know, whereby, continuity is key.
It is, you know, and I can stick this record on and, you know, before you know it, it's the end of side one, but it just, every song melds well together and gels, and it just flows nicely. And like I say, it's not just an album that has eight tracks and only two of them are really good because they're the singles and the rest is filler. For me, it doesn't feel like there's any filler on this. You know,
no, I'm joking.
Have you, I suppose it's hard to plan anything at the moment. Anyone see the album comes out, are you going to do, it's hard to plan any gigs or...
Yeah, we did have plans to do a tour in September, but obviously this has fucked everything. So we're not looking at booking anything at the moment because, you know, nobody knows what's going on. Like, all these tours are being booked for November, December, but if I'm honest, I can't see them happening.
Yeah, I've got tickets to see Deep Purple. Funny enough, I bought tickets to see George Thorogood. Do you know?
I don't know.
You do. Terminator. Bad to the bone.
I just fancied something different. And I was listening to like one scotch, one bourbon, one beer. And I just fancied a night out of just some blues music. Yeah. But yeah, everything's just been put back a year. It's like, yep, next year. Bang.
Yeah.
And I was going to be seeing George. What's his name? From
George. Jeff.
Jeff from Queensryche. Fuck's sake.
Oh, forgot his bloody name now. What's his name?
Jeff Tate.
Tate, that's it, yeah.
Jeff Tate. He's doing Empire and Rage of Order in full. That was put back from May to September, but I don't think that's going to happen either.
Nah. I've got all the gigs that I had booked got cancelled, so I was going to see Guns N' Roses and Faith No More and...
Faith No More, love Guns N' Roses.
I had something else. I had Pearl Jam as well. I've never seen Pearl Jam, so I was quite looking forward to that. But I've got tickets for Genesis in December.
You might be lucky there, to be fair.
I might be, but to be honest, Phil Collins looks like he's on his deathbed, so I fuck knows.
Yeah, I was tempted to go to that myself, but Phil Collins, he retired, didn't he? He was like, well, yeah, that's done. And then he come out of retirement and did like a week at the Royal Albert Hall, and that was solo stuff. And didn't he like fall over back? He was the first night he walked on stage with a walking stick.
Shit.
And then and it's just like, fucking hell. Like, is he? Mind you, I've got tickets to see Ozzy Osbourne as well, and I don't think that's going to happen.
No, that's not happening. I mean, people keep saying he's in a bad way, man.
Yeah, it's been postponed like 2-3 times now, and I wish they'd just cancel it altogether, and then Priest can go out and tour and do a gig, because I'm desperate to see Priest one more time at least.
Priest would be great, wouldn't they?
Until he's actually dead, Challenge never not happen.
Nah. Apparently he's not in a good way at the moment, though, is he? So that's sad.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. I was having this conversation the other day and saying that, you know, we're probably quite lucky in that we've seen a lot of them big key names, you know, from the 70s, 80s, 90s. Because they're all getting old now, and you know, like Sabbath have supposedly retired, they're done. You know, it's like Kiss or, you know, 50 years and they're coming to the end. And it's like, what's it going to be like in the next 10 years when all of these bands are gone?
Yeah, I mean, I saw Kiss on the farewell tour, took my boy to that. I'm trying to get him to see as much music And that's the reason I'm going to see Deep Purple, really. It's just like, let's see them while they're here, because when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you seen Purple before?
No, I haven't, no.
Yeah, they're pretty good. For me, the Richie Blackmore wasn't in them, so obviously that, you know, that's Purple for me. And I like Coverdale era, because I'm not a massive fan of Gillan. I don't know why. Weirdly, because he sound, well, Bruce Dickinson obviously emulated Ian Gillan quite a lot. But I don't know, there's just something about him I just don't like.
I just want to see. I don't know that much about Deep Purple, and I quite shamefully feel I should know more. But I probably much, if they did like a greatest hits set, I'd probably be happy with that. And I should dig a bit deeper with. I know Glenn Hughes is doing a show at the moment where he's doing Deep Purple material just from his era of the band.
That's cool.
Apparently, that's a really good show.
I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah. Saying that, Ian Gillan, I love the album he did with Black Sabbath. And it is a bit of a wild card, but I do love
Born
that
Again.
Album.
Was it Born Again?
Yeah.
A bit wild for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Yeah, that was strange. But then I really like, so this is controversial, right? I am a massive Dio era Sabbath fan.
Yeah.
Probably more so than Ozzy era. Now, Ozzy era had the hits, the big tracks, but there was something about that Dio era that was just magical. It captured that rainbow essence, and it took, I don't know, it just took them on a different journey. It was very fantasy led because obviously Dio was on board. But yeah, I really enjoy Mob Rules was great, Heaven and Hell was great. And then obviously when they went into the Tony Martin era, I fucking love Tony Martin. Like, it isn't Sabbath anymore, but that sound is. It's just incredible.
Well, we got so far with the Sabbath review albums, and we're about to approach where it gets really fucking iffy for some and stuff. And I don't mind Dio. Dio's a fucking legend, let's be honest. I'm not going to go and watch his fucking stupid hologram, because that's a load of fucking shite straight away, to be fair.
It's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah, let's wind it back to Realm of the Heretic.
Sorry,
pace...
one second. Here you go.
Oh, go on then. He's going to drag stuff out.
Here you go, mate.
Is it Headless Cross? Nice. Yeah.
You've got your fucking.
Yeah.
All right. Why are you blurring out your background?
That's great.
Why are you blurring out your background? You've got like a background. I've just got fucking a kitchen and shit.
I didn't know it was something you could do.
See. You've just presented potentially some of the best Black Sabbath albums, the forgotten ones that nobody wants to explore, and they should, because they're good. They're good songs.
They're out of print, but apparently Tony Iommi is working on getting them reissued.
Oh, that'd be sick. I've got a...
It's remixed Forbidden, apparently.
Yeah.
That's a really cool. Controversial album.
It is, with Ice-T on board. The Headless Cross is an album that I play a lot. And I fucking love it. It's so good.
Yeah, it is really. Listen, you're going to have to come back on the show, because we've actually got an ongoing series at the moment where we're going through all of the Sabbath albums, and we've just did a double episode of Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die. So moving on to the Dio era, you'll have to join us. And
yeah, definitely, 100%.
Yeah, because it's a bit of a learning curve for me, because I like Dio. But, like, Sabbath is Sabbath, and it's a bit sacred for me, so there's always going to be a bit of, well, basically, I'm just going to cry like a bitch.
Well, we just did the three Rainbow albums as well, so I wanted to do that just so you had that in the back of your mind, to what Dio was bringing to the band. And just keep in mind, when you listen to Heaven and Hell, just keep in mind the Rainbow albums, and then remember Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die, and what fucking... Just a mess those albums were. So something needed a shake up somewhere.
For me, that Rainbow Rising is up there for like the top five albums ever. Like, it's just mind blowing. I can still stick that album on now, and it still puts hairs on the back of my neck. Like,
yeah,
it sounds incredible. The songs are great. The vocal performance, just everything about it is just it's just insane. you know, when was that recorded? Like 77, was it, or something?
Something like that.
When instead. I was born. Yeah. That's how long ago, 43 years ago.
Yeah, and like I say, you can put it on now, and even today, it just blows most shit out of the water. It's just a phenomenal album.
Right, I'm going to drag us back in with me.
Fishing
rod to Realm of the Heretic. Yeah, the pace keeps up. There's no stopping. They're a solid unit. For a three-piece, this is fucking spot on. They almost certainly grew up listening to the thrash and death metal I did. It's very evident in the music they do. It's not copying for me. It's paying respect. Even the high-pitched scream, which is proper Rain and Blood shit.
Yeah, he does pull that off, granted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nails it completely. It's the shortest song on the album so far, but it's my favourite because fuck, they nailed it. Good track.
No, 100% agree on that. It's like I say, for me, I feel that every track on this album is just a banger. You know, it doesn't let up at all, and it's quite a short album, isn't it? It's not quite 29 minutes or however long Rain in Blood was, but it's within the 30 odd minutes mark, I think.
I really appreciate a short. Come in, kick you in the bollocks. Go out, kick you in the bollocks, punch you in the face as you leave.
Yeah.
Anything longer is more of a journey, where this music isn't about the journey. It's about the aggressiveness and the capturing of the energy. And that's what I really prefer in this type of music. If you have seven or eight songs, I'd say eight songs for me is probably the key track length. For me, there has to be eight songs, because any more, it's a little bit long-winded from a thrash band.
100%. That's kind of what we've done. We did eight tracks with Prey Mortality and eight tracks with Negotium, and it's just a good number. You know, it's not too long and it's not too short. It kind of gets you to that point where you want a little bit more, but it's not dragging you into the realms of Reload, where it goes on for about 4 hours and you just want it to end, you know.
If you have more tracks, then by all means throw it on the B side, give it to your Patreons or whatever the fuck they do on the internet now. But like, just keep it short and keep it sweet. And we are living in a world now where we're on the fucking 69 pence fucking iTunes song.
Yeah.
And people have a very short attention span. If you just release a fucking like Guns N' Roses, Use Illusion 1 and 2, people are just gonna go, what the fuck? We don't have that anymore, and it has to be short and sweet, and that's what it had to be for thrash.
Definitely.
in the 80s for me.
I think everyone said what the fuck back then when Guns N' Roses did them two albums anyway.
pretty much, but there was some fucking quality tunes in that, to be fair.
I think if they'd combined it into one album, they would have had like an absolute killer album, you know, but because it was spread over two, it had some filler, but there was some, you know, some of their best songs were on there.
Yeah, there was some hidden gems within it, and there was a lot to explore for me, being a Guns N' Roses fan. But, there's nothing wrong with that, but now society's changed. We're all instant. Now. And it wouldn't work now.
No, not at all.
That just wouldn't fucking work. Like, the next Guns N' Roses album, when it does come out, because they've made so much money off touring, they have to tour on something, they could just basically record Axl Rose going and just tour and still make fucking millions. So, it's not as important, the album now, but the album then was, and it was quite a brave move to put so much out at one time, to be fair.
Yeah. Because it was back-to-back, wasn't it?
Yeah. Even though they could have probably did another cover for the two. I don't know. But there you go.
Yeah.
And the cover was shit. Any more for Realm of the Heretic?
I would just say this is a nice frantic track. This is obviously, you had like a 6-minute track to begin previously on Coven of Darkness. So this is kind of like a palate cleanser.
And it just goes straight for the jugular on this one. So...
yeah, it's nice frantic riffing. It's a cool song.
So, Iron Gates, I really like the riffs. The echo bit is cheese, man. It's equal measure thrash and fondue. It's proper cheesy. It sounds right from the 80s. Enter the Iron Gates. This has nudged the last song out for me favourite. the speed up change and the riff change is on point. The drumming is spot on and on point. And the solos have been proper on point and frantic, like loading up a Spectrum plus fucking two 148K cassette. But it's been a really, really good listen for me. I hope that there is a better recording of this album and they can take the fucking... the sheen they've rubbed over it. They've tried to rub it with an 80s sheen and, yeah, man, the... I'll edit that bit out because my microphone took a shit. oh, man, we do this all the time. I've become expert at looking for big-ass fucking sound things.
Yes.
Right. But, like, they've put this sheen on it where... it sounds like it's from the 80s, where it has no arse end. It's very tinny. The guitars sound like if you turn them up real high, it sounds like it's making your ears bleed. And the gain on the actual album is really, really quiet. Because when I'm talking to you now, I listened to the album just before we recorded it as well. And when Skype kicked in, I had to turn my fucking amp right down so my ears didn't bleed through talking to everyone on Skype. So there's a certain thing that they need to eradicate and probably give it a little re-release, because I could probably make it sound better sat in my bedroom with some of the sounds they've got on. They're trying to make it sound authentic, but there's no arse end to it. Mm. And you need that arse end to carry it on, if you get me.
See, I'm not offended by the recording at all. I mean, I listen to lo-fi black metal, so, you know, this sounds really good compared to that. But, yeah, I actually like the rawness of the recording. The other thing is, I don't know what kind of budget they had, you know, where they worked.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure. Is it intentional or is it monetary?
I would actually be... I mean, I don't have a clue what I'm on about. But, yeah, I'm doing the Alex Jones. I'm kind of retiring. But I would actually say, if I went into a studio and said, look, I want to take this sort of raw, I don't know, pull an album out here. Say it's like Exalder's first album. I want to take this raw sort of gritty production, or maybe like sort of like an old punk album or something. I bet that would actually be harder to achieve now than... just again, say I was listening to Silosis' new album this morning on the way home from work. It's just that it's got this sort of perfect, clean production. I bet the raw, gritty, sort of 80s or even 70s sounding production would actually be harder to achieve now than something that's clean and sort of that sterile thing.
From experience, it's definitely harder to get that older sound now because everything is digitalized.
Yeah,
you run the risk of overproducing that sound and making it sound really shit. But to, you know, if you wanted to get, for example, the sound of that Burzum got, you know, for the first couple of records or so, like it's difficult to get that now.
Yeah, exactly. Burzum's an even better example. Yeah,
because so many bands have tried to capture that Burzum sound, and you can't, you know, because obviously it was at a certain time with a certain shitty amp with certain, you know, recording budget.
Recorded it in the kitchen.
Yeah, you know. And
thing is, though, I can agree with that to a certain extent, and I'll throw it to another album, the Black Album. Okay, a lot of money was thrown at that, but a lot of bands tried to get that heavy, meaty R sound after it.
Yeah, they did.
So there is a lot of followers, but this, I'm not sure whether the budget was there, but it just feels like... it feels like the sound for me is slightly boxed in and the bass is at the back. I'm a bass player, for fuck's sake. I'm going to notice it. And the bass is very, very busy and there's some really cool fills. But at the same time, it's just closed in and it's very silent. It's like listening to your mate on the phone and he's saying, listen to this, and he'll put it in front of the speaker and you listen on the phone going, yeah, that's cool. But like, yeah, it sounds shit because I'm on the phone.
I don't know. It's like everyone talks about how there's no bass on Rain in Blood. But then again, if you listen to Napalm Death's first album, I mean, if you listen to like Pig Destroyer, Prowler in the Yard had no bass on it at all. It was literally a vocalist, a guitarist and a drummer. And they said, like, why didn't you have any bass on the album? Because of the speed we're playing.
it would sound like Scum, and the bass on that album sounds like just a load of fuzz. So,
thing is, though, this isn't the first album where we've had where I've said that like the gain is fucking terrible, and it's now though it's 2016. It's like that's what bemuses me a little. I'm just thinking you didn't have that lack of budget. You probably just wanted it to sound like it was from the 80s, and I'm okay if it's that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not just saying, oh, it's all shit. If you're aiming for that, I'm okay with it.
Maybe their bass player had left and they just got Jason Newsted and they just decided to turn it down.
Can you imagine doing that, just hiring Jason Newsted to play on your album? Like, yeah, Jason Newsted's on my album, and then just, not going to turn it down. Tradition.
I'm sure he's used to it, though.
That'd be such a shit thing to do, but highly amusing. It'd be worth paying all that money just to... Yeah.
Oh, this money must come from business. This must come from non-bass players then, because fuck y'all. Yeah. I was in a band in Liverpool, and I got bored with having one single speaker on one side by me, so I got a valve amp with two speakers and pushed one to one side and one to the other. I was just like, yeah, everyone's gonna hear this now. Thank you. Any more for Realm of the Heretic?
No, I sort of send me peace, really. We was on Iron Gates, weren't we, actually?
I don't know.
Yeah.
We kind of went west. Okay, yeah. So Spectre of Rebirth, and I'll make it sound like I never said that. 6 minutes and 10 seconds. It's a long one, but like the guitarists are spot on, man. When it kicks in, I love it. The bass and drums are working great in a cheeky little tandem stops that they do, and pulsating bass drums. Really think this is more of a throwback album rather than we're putting something new out. I'm not putting it down for it. I like it for what it is. This is music to drive your car really fast down a long highway. Absolutely fucking twatted. Insane, thrashy and angry. I really like it. Big fret wanky solo, which totally fits in. Like a chainmail and a glove. I've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones and I just thought a chainmail glove and oosh. Doesn't seem like it's a long song, but it's kept its frantic pace throughout. And the riff and the bass and everything kind of kicks in for me. I just wish the sound quality was a little bit of a step up. But other than that, man, I really enjoyed it. And it didn't seem as long as it was.
That's the great thing about their long songs, isn't it? Is they don't feel like they're 6 minutes long, you know, because they just take you on a nice thrashing journey. And the great thing about their solos as well is I really don't like Slayer solos. Like Kerry King's solos are just the most sort of like tuneless things ever. And these solos kind of have more of a Hanneman feel to them, which I like. You know, they're not just fret wanking for fret wanking's sake. But yeah, and the drums, he just really has that Dave Lombardo groove to him. Which is a good thing, you know, the fact that he could drum like that. I reckon this is the sort of band that would be great if you caught them at a small show or even at a festival, if you caught them at Bloodstock or whatnot, you know, just on the Sophie stage late one Friday, Saturday night. I reckon they'd just go down a storm.
Yeah. Or the venue that I saw you at, the downstairs at the Dome. I forget the name of the place now. They'd be great in there.
They really would.
Yeah.
You know, people jumping on stage and stage diving off like the old obituary shows back in the day would, you know, just really...
Sorry, I thought you were finished.
No, that was me. I was going to say obituary shows were hardcore, man.
Oh, they'd be great, weren't they?
I love Obituary. That band is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Iron Gates for me was just... I was just sitting there going, this is post-mortem. This is just post-mortem. And... it really sort of started to annoy me. But I will say Spectre of Rebirth was,
it made up for it. This is actually one of those songs where I found myself nodding along to and going, actually, this is actually pretty cool.
So, this is a really good song. And maybe if they, you know, expanded on this going forward, I might be a bit more won over, I think. But, this is definitely one of the highlights of the album.
I love the fact that like you're so politically correct with your Darling,
I don't have a politically correct bone in my body.
So why are you being so politically correct? When if you don't like it, just say it's shit, because I will.
Because I'm finding redeeming features.
Love your redeeming features. Awakened from the Abyss. The pace is not slowing down. The songs keep you moving along in a frantic, no slowing style. They've got a good stop-start thing going on. And I love playing with bands live. I fucking love it to death. There's no other drug that can get even close. When you've got like that rhythm with your drummer and you're a bassist and a guitarist and you've got that din, 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 and you've got it all nailed in, and they nailed it in as well. Yeah, it's cool. There's been no filler, which I think Joe's thought some of the songs were filler, but for me, it's all been really good. They've kept it face melting from the start, and about 1 minute and 50, they've got like a cool change up. This is everything I like about thrash, and I know it's homage, and I know it's just like, it's minor plagiarism at times, but it's made for getting shit done to, and it's music to get shit done to. This shit live would be awesome. I mean, it hurts thinking about it, to be fair, but like the ending is cheese, and it's just, I'm just really loving this album, which is weird because I thought Joe wouldn't mind it that much.
I would say I like the last little, there's actually a little melodic riff at the beginning of this track. That's like, yeah, apart from that, it's pretty fresh by numbers. It's kind of more of the same, really. It's not much really to add to it.
I love it. I love someone else being fucking anti-songs and anti-albums. It's cool.
The thing is, if everyone had the same opinion, it'd be boring, wouldn't it, in the world, you know?
I've not really got much to add to the individual songs, and I'll sum up at the end of the thing, but I think I've got a pretty fair summing up of the album when we get to it. So I'll keep you in suspense until then.
In suspenders?
Who are Mrs.?
Where are you at, Dean?
Yeah, I just love this album. You know, like for me, every track on it is just raging. It's like you said, it is very much a homage. But I think, you know, every so often when a band comes out like that, it's not a bad thing. It's quite nice that they're paying respects to the old school. You know,
haven't we got one more song left to cover? Dark Overseer.
Dark Overseer. Yeah, I'm just asking about Awakened from the Abyss. Oh, right. I've still got my shit together. Thank you, son.
I thought we'd gone into summing up the album.
No. So Dark Overseer, again, strong opening riffs and fierce drums. It seems to have it all for me. I've really enjoyed listening to this album. And I'm going to edit that bit out where we might talk a shit. This is why I like getting new people on the show, because they will come to the show and give you new stuff to listen to and stuff you've never thought to listen to, and then it just sends you down a rat hole where you're looking for other bands. And musical discovery for me is like really cool. I've enjoyed the mix of thrash and punish and riffs and the drums. You can see what they aim for and you can see who they like, and they nailed it. But like, there hasn't been for me any filler songs on this album. It's all been about business. The only thing that will be a detractor, which will take points from it from me when we do out of 10 in a bit, will be the sound quality. But other than that, it's been really cool. I just think they aim for that sound quality because they didn't, like, even Poor Man Bitch could make that sound really cool. But other than that, anyone else for Dark Overseer?
For me, it's a great ending to the album.
Yeah, I think it's basically they're carrying on what they've already done for the rest of the album. It closes things nicely, and I've not really got a lot more to add to it, really. Nice little blistering sort of little solo at the end that sort of finishes things off nicely, but that's about it.
It works. So, out of 10, folks, where we at?
So, I'm going to go... about 8 out of 10 for this. Because like I say, it's just a banger. Just every song I really like. It just makes you want to headbang along. It's just everything about it I really like. The musicianship on it's great. The drumming's great. You know, the vocals, bass, guitar. It's just that they know what they're doing and they've executed it really well. And like I say, it is a homage, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's kind of cool, you know, because it does make you smile, which is good, you know, to listen to an album and actually really enjoy it and make you smile about it is kind of cool these days, isn't it? It's just not, they're not trying to do anything original, but it seems to work in their favour.
Agreed. Joe?
I'd give the album a 7 out of 10. It's not as if I've sort of stumbled across a dark secret that they've sort of, you know, it's not as if they've hired in that they're sort of regurgitating Slayer. It's obviously what they've aimed to do. So it's not as if I'm pointing out something, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm just being a prick, but I'm basically, what I don't like about it is exactly what the appeal is. So maybe I'm just not getting it. But with that being said, the guys do pull off the riffs really well. It is excellently played. And who knows? The guys are probably, no doubt in my mind, they'll put on a great live show. So I'll give it a 7 out of 10. I'm a little bit more won over than I was originally. I've enjoyed listening to the album in preparation for the show, and I've enjoyed the show, but I'm not sure I'd revisit the album, and I definitely won't be buying it. So I'll leave it okay, at that.
Well, that works. That's a negative from Joe, but for me, 8 out of 10, I agree with you, Dean. It's quality stuff. I just feel the sound quality could have took it up a point. And I'm not sure why they did it, and I am proper in the mind that they've aimed for that sound, because that's the only way it would sound like that nowadays. But other than that, I enjoyed it. Thrash music, enjoyable. It's got Hitler on the cover, and it fucking rocks for me. So 8 out of 10, good album, and I really enjoyed finding some new music.
Right, just take that one little sentence. It's got Hitler on the cover, and it fucking rocks. The podcast is now going to get cancelled because of that statement. That's the headline that's going to get used.
If it's not being cancelled by now, for fuck's sake, yeah, it's been cancelled.
It's not going to get cancelled. So.
No, not enough people listen to cancel us. Yeah, we're not big enough on Twitter. We haven't got a tick mark. So Dean, tell us where we can find the band, man. Where's all your stuff? Where can we find what you do?
So obviously Facebook, where everything is these days. Just the Infernal Sea, but you can follow us on everything. We're on all social media, so you know, Instagram and Twitter and. You can listen to all our tracks on YouTube and Spotify, Bandcamp. I think it's even on Tidal and Deezer, if anybody uses any of that, Apple Music. We're out there. If you just put in the Infernal Sea, you'll find us.
Awesome. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been a cool show, and lots of editing to be done because I needed a piss. But thanks. You're welcome to come on whilst we approach the Dio stuff, man. This will be something to probably pull me back from being the horrible vociferous cunt that I am normally when I don't like something. But nice one. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, Dane, it's always a pleasure talking to you, mate. And I bid everyone, check out the Infernal Sea. Check out the new album. Go see them live when you are allowed to see bands live again. And yeah, definitely, man. Definitely come on with the Black Sabbath Dio era. And
the new
album's coming on about September the 18th, I believe. So maybe in September, when the album's a bit closer to release date, we'll cover it then.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. And I'll happily talk about the Dio era Sabbath all day long, because I get baited for it all the time, because I'm saying that I think it's better than the Aussie stuff, and everyone's just like, what the fuck? But... You know.
I'm approachable when it comes to it. It's just one of them. I can understand it, but I just need to experience it and just take my own view from it. Like, normally I'm fucking the negative Nelly, but the past, I'm gone. It's like being 3 or 4 shows, Joe, where I've been positive. What the fuck is going on?
See, I think because I'm a vocalist, I really appreciate Dio as a vocalist. Ozzy has his own unique style, but he's not the best vocalist in the world. And The Sabbath stuff is the definitive Sabbath stuff with Ozzy singing, but I don't know. I don't feel I have
an attachment to it like everybody else does. Maybe it's because when I was younger, I was more brought up around the Rainbow era. So I kind of have that attachment to Dio.
It's the same with like Doctor Who in a way. You kind of have an emotional attachment to the Doctor Who you was into when you was fucking younger, I think.
Sylvester McCoy.
Yes.
Yeah. I think there's sort of neck and neck on how many Doctor Who's there'd been and how many singers of Black Sabbath there were. So
that's probably about the same, isn't it?
To be fair, Sylvester McCoy was dark and shit. Now you've got fucking wobbly jellies and kids watching Doctor Who. So I was scared when I watched Doctor Who. None of this shit now. I'll watch it and I go, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So to upset the world, like, but yeah.
If you rewatch some of that old Doctor Who stuff, though, it is shit.
Yes, but that's why it's better in the mind. It's like the A-Team. Certain episodes of the A-Team, you'd be like, yeah, when you've had a few beers, like, let's not deny it. You can't watch it sober. But, like, yeah, man, it's really shit. But back then, it was fucking cool.
No,
it was proper spot on. Joe, do you have magazines and stuff to plug away?
Just check out the latest edition of Metal Legion magazine. I'm working on some stuff for the next edition. I've got a pretty big project coming up for that, actually. If you're a Celtic Cross fan, watch this space. And yeah, that's about it, really.
So you can find us on Twitter at Rock Show Online, on Facebook, The Rock Show Online. This show has been fucking cool. If you enjoyed the show, share the show. Don't be a cunt. Thanks very much for listening. See you later.